coming of age stories on their own are like stabbing yourself in the eyes.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For
masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them. This week, we have me, Anna. I'm a librarian, currently in Las Vegas.
I'm Matthew. I'm also a librarian in Las Vegas.
I'm Megan. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, so now you have this extra special international podcast.
Yeah.
And I am Jessie. I'm a library technician in Vancouver.
Awesome. And we are here today to discuss this month's genre in this episode.
Last month.
Right, last month's genre.
This episode's genre.
Right, which is coming-of-age fiction, or nonfiction, mm-hmm. or coming-of-age generally. Did anyone read a nonfiction?
I did after Matthew mentioned that that was possible, so technically I'd already read it, and now I get to count it.
I didn't think it was possible.
You didn't think it was possible to have a nonfiction coming-of-age?
Until someone mentioned it, I didn't realize it was a possibility.
Yeah.
So I guess we've sort of gotten in the discussion of what defines it in some ways for us.
It's that German word.
Yeah, I'm not even going to pretend I can say it.
I'm going to say it, but goodness knows I'm probably slaughtering it. Bildungsroman?
Yeah, something like that. Maybe I'll drop in like
a recording.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bildungsroman.
That sounds like books about buildings, though.
Or Romans.
The Romans built a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So, potentially. Anyway, coming of age seems to imply within its own title what it is, right?
Yeah.
Is it coming to a certain age or maturity? Mm-hmm.
I like the idea that usually it's described for, like, young adult-y things, by which we mean, like, teenagers. But I do like the idea that you could have a coming-of-age novel about someone, like, realizing that, yeah, okay, being 60 is fine.
See, so I actually read one that was about an older person using that justification.
Fabulous. Nice. I really like that idea, too, because I will tell you, like, the idea of reading about kids getting to young maturity is just so unappealing now. And, like, which is funny because there is some young adult literature I totally enjoy, and that's basically the vast majority of what young adult literature is doing, because in a lot of ways, a lot of, say, genre fiction is often doing some version of this. The person is coming to a realization about themselves. Like, this happens all the time in literature in all different ways. Like, that doesn't just happen in coming of age, but somehow adding this facet of calling it coming of age and making it all about youths coming into their maturity just annoys the crap out of me.
There's an interesting idea of, like, time scales, too, because with coming of age, you can have, like, huge amounts of different time scales. Like, yeah, if you're looking at young adult, it's usually, like, turning from 15 to 16, and, like, that's, like, them coming of age and experiencing all these different things and learning who they really are. But if you're, like, looking at it in literature, a lot of times it's, like, the life of, like, the entire life's journey of a person.
Mm.
Or it can be, like, the life of a family.
Wait, Jesse,
we're always coming mm-hmm. of age.
Did you just read The Brief Wonderful Life of Oscar Wilde again?
I should have.
That's a great idea.
I could have. Oh, it totally is too. Yeah, and that's like multiple generations all into this one story. So yeah,
I think the one that Robert talked about in the book club was about a Greek family.
Oh, Greek.
In, I want to say Detroit, but I'm lying. It's not Detroit. It's like Boston or something.
I obviously, the very vague memories of him talking about a book that kind of encompassed what I was trying to get at.
It'll be in the show notes.
Okay. If we can figure out what it is.
We'll find.
The show notes.
I'm sure we can find Robert between now and then.
I'm sure. So would you say we all had a background in coming-of-age books?
Well, I guess we all came of age, hopefully, maybe.
We're working on it.
Yeah, working on it.
Couple more generations than that, maybe.
Work in progress. I was going to say this is like a huge amount of what I feel like I was assigned to read in like high school. I mean, the quintessential one that is the Catcher in the Rye that people always talk about, which, I mean, I hated in high school. But they say you can only read that then and enjoy it, and if you try to go back and read it later, that it just doesn't work anymore.
I hated that book.
That was my explanation for why I hated it when I read it when I was 18. It's like, too late, too old.
Yeah.
Nope. But it might also have been because the main character was a boy, because I find them especially annoying in their teenage.
At that age, yeah.
Matthew, does that age ever stop? No comment.
All right, so how did we go about picking something?
So I did a whole bunch of different searches, and I did like genre searches where I do two different genres. So I do like fantasy and coming of age and science fiction and coming of age, and basically trying ways to like make it interesting, because I agree that coming of age stories on their own are like almost like stabbing yourself in the eyes with something, you know, not soft. I don't know.
I think that's what we do every month, though. Like, every genre is like, how can we make this a fantasy novel as well as whatever other genre it actually is?
So I did a whole bunch of that, and I actually took out, like, stacks of books, but of course I only read two. One of them happened to be something that I just picked up from the shelves without doing any searching because I wanted to reread it, so.
Yeah, that's the strategy we go with, Jesse.
Yeah, exactly.
Quantity over quality, right?
Yes.
That's my catchword.
Megan, how many books did you read?
So I'm only going to talk about three, probably, unless someone really wants me to talk, but I did read seven.
What?
Including two graphic novels?
I think you probably read more than all of the rest of us combined.
Well,
I win. Right? Yeah, you win.
This is the competitive thing coming out again, Megan.
I don't know. I read a lot of things I really didn't like, so I kept looking for something.
So how did you pick them?
So I went into the catalog and I did a subject search for coming of age, and it told me I should be searching for Buildings Roman, or however it's supposed to be pronounced. And then I looked through the list, and then one of my coworkers recommended something, so I read that as well. How about you guys?
I went to the Goodreads list of like best coming of age books or whatever, and then whatever in the top 100, I think, that was already in our house. That's what I ended up reading. Actually, that's not true. I borrowed a couple of things from the library, and then we found one in a box in Alaska. That actually sounds like the plot of a coming-of-age novel.
That's how you become a wizard.
I guess it's even better. The book I found in the box in Alaska was A Wizard of Earthsea by Ursula K. Le Guin.
No, there's a coming-of-age series called So You Want to Be a Wizard, and how you get picked to be a wizard is you come across the wizard manual, and in the beginning it's all books, but one of the character's younger sister, when she becomes a wizard, is because the computer that they get is installed with the wizardly manual.
Nice.
That's fabulous.
Can people pirate it? Can you download illegal copies of the wizard manual?
Oh, I don't want to run into the DRM on that manual.
What she actually does is downloads her copy of the wizard's manual into a whole new species so that they all become wizards. Sorry, that's a spoiler.
Yeah, really? We'll have to put a spoiler for that one on here.
To be fair, the book was written in the 80s, so I think you're best buy
back when computers could do everything.
Yeah. Or nothing. Like.
Yeah, true. Everything or nothing.
Okay, so what I did is basically relied on my own brain.
Whoa.
You can do that?
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy?
I think that depends on whether you have a brain or not to rely on. If you're like
Let's
a scarecrow.
Just assume everyone here on this podcast.
Yeah, it basically came down to I had a couple of books on my shelf. And as we were moving, I had a friend who really wanted them, and they actually both kind of counted for coming of age. One of them I read before we actually got, like, the week, like, in a couple of days right before we got this genre, I read it. The other one I read over the last month, and I was trying to read them so I could give them to her before I left, so I wouldn't have to take them along with me.
It's good motivation.
I know. And then in a box, we found a copy of a book that Matthew had read ages ago, and I pulled it, but I did not read it. But he recommended that one to me as a good coming-of-age example. And then when
we carried it around a little.
Yeah, I carried
around. That's worth it, right?
I totally did. Carried around and not
only you could absorb a book through carrying it around. Like, I would have read so much more.
Oh, I know.
I know.
Just sleep with it under your pillow.
Yeah, that's got to work. And then when I was in a comic shop in Portland on our way to Las Vegas, I just was looking around at various things and picked up a comic, and I was in the mood for something funny and silly and grabbed a comic and started reading it and bought it. And it turned out it was totally counted as a coming of age. And yet I still didn't manage to finish that one, even though it was really short. But it was honestly because, like, we had so few things unpacked. Like, all my books are in boxes in the back of cars or shipping, or, like, they're just in boxes. Yeah,
like, we have a copy of The Brief, Wonderful Life of Oscar Wilde somewhere. Somewhere.
I should say all of our everything is in boxes or bags or bins or who knows where right now. Mm. So I just don't know. It's just too disorganized for words, so I couldn't figure it all out that way. So that was just an accident one. I was just going to go with the first couple I had on my shelf that I just knew of as being really popular and important right now. And then the one that Matthew recommended to me, I thought would be a good one to cover a little bit more of a classic look at what the coming of age novel is. But
and
then
foreign.
And foreign. But then I didn't feel like actually reading a classic version. I just went for the modern versions.
It's so short.
I know. It is short. So with that, I guess that means that we get right into what we actually read.
Yay!
Okay.
Who wants to start?
Well, you have the most books, so you should start.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Okay, so the very first one I read, actually, is called How to Build a Girl by Caitlin Moran.
Oh, yeah. I actually pulled another book by her off the shelf on the way as we were packing up, and started kind of skimming through it, trying to decide if I was going to keep it or not. And then I really liked the way she wrote, and so I kept it.
Well, it is called How to Become a Woman or something like that, or How to Be a Woman. I know I put it on my Goodreads as a want to read, but I've never gotten around to actually reading it.
Yeah.
But this one I think is more recent. It was published in 2014. She's a UK author. It's fictional, but sort of vaguely autobiographical in the sense.
Oh, sorry. Autobiographical?
Maybe there was like ogling involved.
Yes, actually.
I'm sure there was.
Because when Moran was young, she wrote for a music weekly when she was 16, and the main character in this novel writes for a music review rag of some kind. It's very humorous, it's pretty poignant, it talks a lot about sort of expected issues in a coming of age in terms of identity making, what your values are, fame, I guess. So that was definitely an enjoyable read for a first one.
Mm-hmm. It was actually like a music newspaper. It wasn't a blog.
No, it was written in the past when people could do stuff like that.
That makes a lot more sense because my suspension of disbelief was kind of destroyed.
Okay, so the first one I read, I actually realized that I did read three, but one of them I kind of read four, but I don't think that two of them actually count. Like, I would say that they're not quite coming-of-age novels, and maybe I'll get into that at some point. But the first one I read that I do count is Howl's Moving Castle.
Ooh.
Yay!
And I love it because, well, first off, I've read it before several times. I just saw it on the shelf. I was like, yes, I need to reread this.
Yeah, I reread that book last year.
And then I was like, wait a second, she's a young girl that gets turned into an old woman and then becomes herself. This is absolutely a coming-of-age novel. So, yeah, that one, very enjoyable, and I read it. I don't know, I don't really have a lot to say about that one because I feel like a lot of people have either read it or watched the movie for it, or maybe that's just the bubble I'm in, but yeah.
I think we're definitely in a Miyazaki bubble.
Yeah.
People have no idea who he is at all.
That may be true. But that is actually, that's a fabulous example. And I really enjoy that book. And I think it is an example that both adults and youth can read and enjoy. Not everybody likes Howl's Moving Castle. I don't know. Have you read that one, Matthew?
I remember I watched the movie and I didn't really like it. And then I went and read the book and I liked it even worse.
What?
Even less. Like, the movie to me was like, oh, this girl gets turned into an old woman and doesn't care. And then the book, all I remember about it was like Welsh people and
yes,
that's like tracksuits or something. Like,
oh my God. Well, I don't know. I really enjoyed it. It's kind of like, it's a very fun, magical coming of age kind of romance too. Like, there's that as a subplot. So, it's one that I absolutely, like, I just read because I enjoy it every, like, throughout my life. I started, like, I read this when I was a kid to start, and I still enjoy it equally as much today rereading it. So, I don't know, it just kind of has that last, like, it's a very charming book. It's hard to put it.
It is. Yeah. So, I'm actually going to talk first about the one that I read the couple of days right before we got assigned this genre, because I actually think it falls the most squarely into it. Which is Eleanor and Park. Ooh, I'm sorry, by Rainbow Rowell.
I almost picked that one up too, actually.
Yeah. And I had that on my shelf and I've been meaning to read it for ages. I forget how I got, like, I got a nice hardback copy somehow for really super cheap.
I think that might have just been one left by my old roommate.
Oh, it probably was.
Because she left tons of YA novels in her house when she left.
Yeah.
And by, like literally, like, a ton. Like, I feel like there was, like, 100 books or something, at least, that she left behind.
Yeah. So I think that probably is how we got it. But I did. I actually really enjoyed it. I didn't fan over it as much as many people have. Like, it wasn't amazing, but it was an enjoyable read. It didn't make me want to go read other things by Rainbow Rowell in particular, but it didn't make me not want to. And it was definitely a version of coming of age that really tried to look at sort of the modern perspective of dealing with a lot of issues that have existed over the ages, and yet right now we're really about dealing with and talking about what these particular issues mean to kids coming of age. So a lot of tough things that kids have to face and deal with and grow up with, and make choices about, and doing that as in a very different way than, like, I feel like a lot of those things happen in things like, I don't know, Charles Dickens literature, but, like, it happens in a very different mode.
So let me tell you about the Rainbow Rowell book that I read or tried to read that did make me want to never read anything that she has ever looked at.
Was it Fangirl?
Yes. So Fangirl, which is a book about a twin, so one from a set of twins, goes off to university and is obsessed with basically a serial numbers filed off version of Harry Potter / fiction.
I like that description.
Awesome.
And by...
I mean, you're just selling me on the book at this point.
And by like, for those that don't know, slash fiction is fan fiction, which is fiction about an established character or universe written by just random people. And slash is relationship based. And so it usually refers to, for the most part, male romantic fictions that is in... fanon, which is like fan canon, so it's not legitimate or anything. It's like, I feel the closest it's ever really gotten to being recognized in most things is probably that episode of Supernatural where they encounter, like, somebody had been writing books about them in a slash relationship.
Supernatural plays a lot with fanon and with, like, having fandoms write and play with that. And honestly, I haven't watched enough of Supernatural to know much how this works, but
there's 12 seasons. There's so much to watch.
That. Oh my gosh.
It's a long, long history there.
Yeah, it's still going. Yeah. So I started reading this book, and this is one of maybe two or three times in my life where I've been reading, and the thing I've been reading has been so not for me. I'm not saying it's badly written or a bad book. I'm just saying that I am not the target audience in any way. It's so unappealing to me that I forgot why I enjoyed reading.
You've done this so many times now, though.
No. This one was even more so. Like in the past, you said I did it about the psychological thriller,
yeah.
But I finished the psychological thriller and just thought it was a waste of time. This one, I forgot why I liked reading, and I got a quarter of the way through the book and gave up. It was just not my thing on any level. I think part of it
reduced tolerance now.
I don't think it's just that. I think part of it is just. Like, I was excited. I'm like, oh, yeah, I went into it not knowing anything about it. And I was like, fangirl. I'm like, cool. I like people that are fans of things. And I realized that Harry Potter is possibly the least interesting fandom that exists for me. I have absolutely no interest in it.
Jesse despises you now.
And even
officially.
Less interest. I'm just glad Amanda's not here, to be honest.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Between Jesse and Amanda, they would just crush you right now.
And I was trying to think of what could possibly interest me less. And I guess I was like, Lord of the Rings, I guess, is the other one. And I just, I'm just not super into fantasy stuff. There are fantasy things that I enjoy. This was
what about the coming of age aspects of it? Anything?
Well, I thought she was somebody that I would never want to interact with. And that her sister and her roommate were much more interesting characters. And I wish the book had been about them. I guess maybe eventually she like makes friends or is able to
interact with the
ask
world.
For help. Like she just eats power bars because she's too embarrassed to ask where the dining hall is. And I'm like, there's too embarrassed to ask where the dining hall is. And you spend all of your time online. There is the internet. You can look up a map or look around campus and there are signs that say where the dining hall is. Like she just seems incompetent on a level I found hard to understand. And I say this as somebody who has not been a teenager in a very long time.
Yeah.
That is like when I was reading Eleanor and Park, I did think like this feels like teenagers. Like it's not driving me nuts like it clearly did to Matthew, but it does feel like teenagers.
I'm sure I would drive me nuts if I interacted with a teenage version of me as well.
So. Oh gosh.
This is some version of hell where we're all stuck in it with a teenage versions of ourselves in the same room and you have to like not kill them because then you wouldn't exist later.
I just want to give my teenage version a haircut. That's really all I want to do.
All right, what's next, Megan?
Okay, so the next thing on my list is the nonfiction essay collection that I read by Ivan Coyote, which is published just last year. Ivan is a Vancouver writer. I think they're originally from the Yukon. So this is autobiographical memoir essay style of them growing up in a small town with their family and throughout sort of the rest of their life in terms of gender and trans identities. And this also is something that kind of hits hard on sort of developing and strengthening your own particular values. And I think for Coyote, if anybody else has read their stories before, you'll have a sense already of what this kind of entails, their type of storytelling, how they develop it, and these sort of values of like hard work, you don't complain about stuff, your family is really important, both in terms of those that you're related by blood as well as those that you've kind of chosen within a particular community to support. So all those values come through very strongly in this work. I love Ivan's work, so I love this, and I'm glad I got to talk about it.
What was the title?
Tomboy Survival Guide.
I don't think I have that one by them, but I do have some of their other stories, and really good. Hmm. Yeah.
That's good, because I've seen the name around, but I'd never read anything by them.
Yeah, generally they write the same sort of format, so short stories, short essays. Some are memoir style, some are more fictional. And they've also done a collaborative work with Ray Spoon called Gender Failure.
Yeah, that's the one I've been seeing a lot of recently.
Yeah.
I happened to see them give a keynote speech at one of the BCLA conferences. It was really good. And, like, the way they talk is just so mesmerizing. Like,
yeah, they're very much of a performative artist as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And BCLA, by the way, British Columbia Library Association, for anybody who randomly wanted to know what that was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Jargon.
It slips in.
Okay. So the other one that I read that I'm counting is Binti and Binti Number One by Nnedi Okorafor. This was a Hugo and Nebula award-winning novella, and it is also the first time, and this is a testament to me changing, the first time I picked up a novella and read it on purpose. Like, I never do that.
Oh,
ever.
Cool.
I don't think I've, yeah, no, I can't remember the last time. And I loved it. It was really, really good. It's following the main character, Binti. So she is from, like, pretty much a colony on Earth in Africa, I believe. I'm not sure where in Africa. And it's kind of like everything is Earth, but it's everything has different names, so it's a little harder to track down where exactly. But so she's in this colony, and they are very, very good with technology, and they have very special skills, and it's called, forget the term that they use in it, but basically like harmonizing, maybe that's the term actually. They harmonize with technology in a way that makes it work really well. However, the colony believes that they should never leave Earth. They have to stay in their colony. That's what they do. That's who they are. And to leave is a big deal. Of course, Binti is super, like, she's like a master harmonizer. And so she gets called to this interstellar university. And she accepts. And basically, she has to leave her entire family and way of life behind. It's really big. And part of that is leaving there's just a lot of things she has to leave behind. So she takes a little bit of her home with her in this jar of clay, which she also uses to treat her hair. When she's in space, of course, everything goes wrong, and she meets aliens. And it's great.
That's not what goes wrong, is it?
Well, yes.
Well, yeah.
And yeah. But no, it's a really good one, and I'm really happy to hear that Nnedi is actually doing another, number two. I don't know if it's out yet or if it's coming out soon. I think this year, actually. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to read it. So,
yeah, I read this one as well. It was very good, and I was very excited about.
I'm so glad to hear that, because it's been on my list, like on this, you know, that little sideline of things, yeah, that keep popping up that you're like, I should read that. Oh yeah, that one. Yeah, I want to read that.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to get to that one, and I'm glad to hear you guys liked it.
Yeah, that's how it was for me for a long time too. It's like you just see it on the shelves all the time, and it sounds good, and it won 2 like best of awards, and I was like,
yeah,
I should read that. And then this came, I was like, no, I'm definitely reading this time for sure.
Okay, so my next one is by John Green. Surprise. I feel like this is what John Green does, is write, yeah, coming of age. So, sorry.
I'm going to question if this one counts as coming of age or not, but.
Yes, well, valid.
I probably will do
for
that
for a specific
everything.
Reason.
Yeah, there's a specific reason that's very spoilerific, because, I think.
Well, this is, no, it's not actually, because you know from the very beginning of this one, which is The Fault in Our Stars, that she is going to die from cancer.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, also just through, like, culture, you know.
Yes, well,
you can't,
yes,
avoid it.
Yeah. But this one has, like, there is something that's going to happen towards the end of the book. And I figured out what was going to happen so early. Like, right from the beginning. I knew immediately what was going to happen.
Did you finish reading? Because that would be hard to finish reading.
Yeah, I did finish it. It took me a long time to get all the way through it. It's a little, like, it is as much about the dealing with the mortality as it is about the coming of age, and it's both at the same time. It's the coming of age and the recognition of your mortality, but written from the perspective of a person who's long since come to come to an understanding of their mortality as a child and knowing that they are going to die young because they have a terminally fatal terminal cancer. And that there's no getting around that. So they've already dealt with that, but the book is basically going through the process of getting the reader to play with these ideas with them, and come to think about them in more complex ways and to think about disease and how we deal with those in our culture who are diseased and those around us who aren't the same and seem to be frailer for some reason or broken in some way, in quotes, and how we treat them and what that is like from their perspective. And it's, I mean, there's a lot that's really good about it. It's just, again, one of those examples where I read a young adult book. So if you're reading it from the perspective of a young adult book, then it's great. And if you're reading it from the perspective of a rich adult novel, it's just not quite as rich as I would want it to be. But it was fine.
Yeah, I was going to say, your description sounds really interesting, but because it's John Green, I don't think I would pick it up.
No.
Now, I've never read any of John Green's stuff, but I do want to say the one thing of his that he's done that I do like, which is he was streaming playing like FIFA soccer video games online, and I guess he was getting like Twitch subscriptions or whatever. He was getting some amount of money from it. So he then used that money to sponsor the team he was playing as. And then in the next version of the game, his sponsorship was on the uniforms of the players in the game that he was still playing as.
So it was getting meta in there.
Oh, man.
And like they named like a like he was playing as like a not very high level team. But they like named, I think, a section of the stands after him and stuff. So like, yeah, it's really weird.
That's kind of hilarious.
It is. I have, like, John Green does a lot of fun and interesting and things that I respect him for.
Except his novels.
But, and the novels are fine. They're just not, I'm not the audience.
I think you just can't describe them as fun.
Well, yeah, they are frequently a little on the dark side.
Well, you know, that's very appealing to teenagers.
Yeah, there is a little, there is definite truth to that.
So I guess, like, speaking of things on the dark side that appeal to teenagers, I can segue into my next one.
Go for it.
Which is The Ocean at the End of the Lane by Neil Gaiman.
Ooh.
And Neil Gaiman is an author who I started reading as a gothy teenager when I read all of Sandman and Neverwhere and like everything else that I could get my hands on by him. And so this is one that I've kind of, like, I used to love his stuff so much, and I've kind of fallen out of love with his work. And this is another one that I kind of feel the same way about. I read it over a month ago now, and I can barely remember what happened. I'm like, there's like sort of rural UK things and a kid and some magic stuff and witches and other stuff, and it's all fine, and I bet people really like it, and I'm just like, I feel like Neil Gaiman, and this is like totally completely unfounded extrapolation, but I feel like Neil Gaiman is like sitting in his house going like, oh, I'm so clever, type, and I'm just like, I think you need to try harder. And that's such a weird thing to say to like a, like, you know, internationally famous best-selling novelist and comic book writer. It'd be like, you just need to try a little bit more. Because I think, I don't know, like, I don't know how much he even works with editors and stuff anymore. Like, because I think sometimes you get to that point where you're just like, here's the thing I wrote, bye. And they're just
my
like,
my name
okay.
is now money.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. And I think...
I agree with that. And I think that right now that there is a bit of a wealth of that has happened within the youth and young adult materials, because they have turned out to be such money makers. Mm-hmm. When they hit it big, they hit it so big that there's a little bit of this happening within those genres where authors are getting beyond editors. Yep. In some way, or where there's just a clearly obvious sense that the author has been that the story and the author and what they're doing is just gotten so big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think but when I finished this book, I just mostly found it boring. So not the ideal thing for me.
I read that one a while ago and I did enjoy it, but it is, I think, a lot of a slower pace than a lot of his other novels. And I would not say that it was my favorite. Like, I really liked The Nancy Boys and I think that's my number one, but I wouldn't put it on that level. But I think it's going for a very different feel too. It's not trying to be like American Gods or Nancy Boys or it's not dark level. It's a little bit dark, but not really. I don't think so.
I will say that I read Sandman Overture a couple of years ago, graphic novel, the like 25th anniversary or whatever, and I thought that was great. Although how much of that I thought was great was because of like the amazing artwork, I cannot say. But I enjoy that. And so I can still enjoy Neil Gaiman works. I'm not just like, everything he writes is terrible.
Yeah, I heard half of a chapter of that. And I think it's the audiobook of that is actually narrated by him, so I checked it out after I decided that I actually do like audiobooks this year.
Fabulous. Literally this morning, I got a notice that one of the audiobooks that I put on hold for this genre is available. I was like, well, great.
Too late. Okay, so the last one that I'm going to talk about sort of in depth is called The Dream Quest of Villette Beau by Kidge Johnson. I may be pronouncing that wrong, so if so, I apologize. This is novella length-ish, written 2016 by a U.S. author. So this is very heavily Lovecraft-influenced. I actually picked it up during our weird month before and just didn't get a chance to come around to it, and then I decided that because she's on a quest, I may as well try and read it for coming of age, because quests, coming of age, those two things go hand in hand.
Yes. Sure, yep. Yeah.
So apparently this is influenced by Lovecraft's The Dream Quest of
the Unknown Caddith.
Yes, which I haven't read, so I have no idea how much is taken, but other people's reviews seem to indicate that they took the environment is what largely influenced this particular interpretation. So Villette Beau is an older lady. She spent her wild youth roaming around as a far adventurer, and then she settled down for 20 years to teach mathematics in a place where mathematics are never the same, ever, from one moment to the next, apparently.
Huh. That seems frustrating. How do you have an economy?
You just can never trust that anything is where it is. So what happens is one of her charges, a really intelligent girl, apparently falls for a dreamer, which is a earth person who has come into the dreamlands, and so she has run off to earth, like plain earth. The problem is she's the granddaughter of a god, and if the god wakes up and discovers that she's missing, probably he's just going to destroy that whole land. And so this is part of like internal plot mechanisms of the gods of the area. So what Villette Beau's quest is to get out of the dream world into the waking world and convince this girl to come back in order to preserve the college, the women's college that she's from, as well as, you know, the entire earth in general. So I loved this little text. It's hard to imagine why not. There's lots of like adventure. She has a really strong sense of self that she's coming back to. It's kind of like she spent 20 years almost sleeping as a professor, and she was never really mentally there for the rest of her life. That this other identity as an adventurous person who goes places and changes and stuff like that is much more, you get the sense of that's what her internal journey is. And so that's why I'm also including it in this particular episode, is because she's coming of age back to the age, sort of an internal state of who she is. And while the other ones, they might be discovering who they are, she's just returning to a self that she kind of already knew that she was.
Yeah, I feel like there is something of that is a common thread and a type. Like, that is a piece of literature that we are very familiar with, or a piece of storytelling that we're very familiar with from a variety of different angles.
Yeah, I've definitely read this story before. Like the story of an older woman who it like has an abrupt event of some kind, or just decides one day that like whatever she's fallen into, that's not actually what she's about.
Yeah,
let's figure this out to where she actually wants to be. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a great interpretation, or like coming of age is a great interpretation mm-hmm. of that.
Mm-hmm. Coming into one's own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else?
Not really. I'm just not going to talk about the other ones because they were a series, and I feel like reading the first volume of them didn't really get into the part where they actually like came of age or really accomplished something. So I think that happens a lot, especially maybe even with graphic novels, where it's like the first one is mm-hmm. like setting up the scene, but you're not actually coming of age, so you have to read it as like a complete set.
Yeah, I had the same experience.
I think you definitely get the ones where the person is perpetually coming of age and never actually comes of age.
Oh, yes.
God, yeah.
Yes, and that's the one we're all just like, oh, come on.
Those are the ones where you quit after 20 volumes and you're like, oh, why? Why well, did like, I waste my life?
The current one I'm thinking of specifically is the Ms. Marvel series by G. Willow Wilson. And it's because she's like never going to get older.
You think that's a superhero specific problem occasionally?
Or a writing problem?
Like serial writing.
I wonder.
I think it's a combination of both of those. And the problem is in like when you're in a mainstream, when you're in the Marvel or DC universe, it's at this point in time, it's basically impossible for characters to age. Mm-hmm. And even if they do age, they end up getting de-aged again sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so like a bunch of characters have gone like up and down in age depending on who's writing them and stuff. And so like you can sometimes like they, you know, they manage to get into adulthood, but sometimes they're just stuck as being a teenager forever.
That's another horror or movie dream.
Another part of hell is just where you're stuck as your teenage self for all time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, remember in I think it's the Vampire Lestat where that poor vampire girl is forever eight or something?
Well, honestly, one of the examples I'm thinking of is Jubilee from the X-Men who got turned into a vampire. So now she can never age either. So she's stuck as a teenager forever.
They really made it canon. They just made it straight out.
Like, yeah, she's like, yeah, no, gonna... she can't age anymore.
Yeah, that would be kind of horrible.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and just give a quick nod to the graphic novel I was reading, which is called Lucky Penny by Anand Hirsch and Yuko Ata. And this was, it's about a young woman who had on, like, just as she is having to leave her apartment because her roommate is moving away, so she can't afford to keep the apartment herself, so she's moving out of the apartment, and as she's in the middle of it all, she loses her job. She has no savings. She has nowhere to go. She has
so many feels.
Yeah, she has nothing. So she finds out that her roommate who's leaving had a storage unit that she's clearing out, and she convinces the roommate to let her take over the lease on the storage unit.
Cool.
So she moves into the storage unit. She's not supposed to be there. She has to sneak in after dark around the security and like get in there, and she sets herself up with her like couch as a bed and you know, little kitchen with the propane stove sort of thing.
Super
and, like,
safe.
Yeah, totally safe. And then it's just all her trials of dealing with all this. But it's sort of based on the premise that she is unlucky. Her name's Penny, and she's actually unlucky. And the coming of age is some of her, like, figuring out her own agency within this. Mm-hmm. What of the luck is her and the choices she makes, and what of it is, yeah, life happens, and you learn how to deal with that. And what does she actually have agency to deal with and do? Mm-hmm. What do you accept, and what do you take the power to change? And she's very adventurous and silly, and she definitely looks at the weird and kooky side of things, mm-hmm. and she sort of gets into weird little situations, but she does so with fun and flair. And it's she's got a vivid imagination based in romance novels, and that sort of comes into play in here. But a lot of it is actually grounded in a lot of like reality.
You know, actually, Snow Crash taught me that living in a storage unit was my future. No?
dystopian future?
We do live in a gated community now, so it's closer and closer to Snow Crash. And plus wearable technology. We're all gargoyles. Idea viruses, memes, you know. It's really... Snow Crash really did just become... I love Snow Crash so much. It was like my favorite book for a long time.
I've never read one of those books I can't read anymore because it would make me angry and sad because it was full of terribleness.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It's one of those books I've decided that it lives on in my heart and like, I can no longer read.
In the meantime, I'm placing a hold on Lucky Penny.
it's got really nice art. I really like the art in it.
It almost looks a little bit like Scott Pilgrim.
Well, it's from the same publisher as Scott Pilgrim, and so I think they're probably like they're kind of marketing towards that sort of audience.
And Matthew, did you want to talk about another one, or we?
I'm hold number three on three copies.
So the other one I read was another one that I found boring. And felt a little bit bad about doing this was Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children by Ransom Riggs. And so this kind of adds to the alliterative R's authors that we read this month. Rainbow Rowell, Ransom Riggs. And so this one is really, I think the major selling point is the weird photographs that it uses in it that are kind of not really part of the narrative. Well, they form part of the narrative, but they also just reflect like people that the main character meets and stuff like that. It's about this guy, this kid, and he discovers that after his grandfather dies that, oh, maybe there is weird mysticky, magicky stuff happening in the world. And maybe he has some sort of, I don't know, he wants to go find out more about his grandfather, and he goes back to this island off the coast of England with his father, and there's time travel and magic and weird kids and stuff, and that's the last book I had to talk about. So Jesse and Megan, you can do the ending.
Hello everybody, Anna and Matthew had to leave because of unfortunate background
noises,
goings-ons,
yeah,
whatever. So we are going to discuss a little bit of our thoughts about the appeal of the genre.
Mm-hmm. So I think, obviously we had talked about appeal a lot during this, just with the teen-ness of it. Like, I think a lot of the appeal of coming-of-age stories is for teens. Like, it's hugely marketed towards teens and written for teens. And I think that's just because teens are literally coming of age. Like, that's their life experience.
I think that's definitely one of the major sort of age periods in which mm-hmm. you have a coming-of-age story and a really big appeal.
Yeah.
But I think it's actually probably you have different periods of transition in your life, mm-hmm. and that's actually what it's capturing. So for some people, their coming-of-age story that they really need kind of support with, and so they're seeking out these kinds of stories might be in your early 20s, right? Yeah. That's going to be a really rough time, being in your early 20s. Maybe you're in school. Maybe you're starting work for the first time. Things are really different.
I just realized, like, Eat, Love, Pray is probably just coming of age targeted at older women.
Yeah, there's a major transition, your quote-unquote midlife crisis.
Yeah.
And so one of the appeals, I know for me at certain periods of my life, has been, I don't know what's going on. Things are really weird. I want to read stories about other people who are having problems because it makes me feel like they figured out their shit. I can probably also make my way through this weird period of my life.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever read coming of age for the purpose of coping with what I'm going through. I read more as more of an escapist sort of thing. So that's usually not the appeal for me, hence me looking for books that are coming of age and fantasy. I just need that extra level of not realness. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like it more kind of because I think it has a little bit of the hero's journey, which is just really appealing to me. And just that it's a very, like, it's a familiar story pattern.
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter. Yeah. It's so well told so many times. So yeah, there is some sort of comfort in that for me, but I don't think I seek it out for the realness of it.
Yeah, and if anybody's really interested in this kind of idea of the hero's journey, I would probably recommend Joseph Campbell's A Hero of a Thousand Faces. I don't know.
That's been recommended to me so many times throughout my life, I really should just read it.
I don't know if I would necessarily recommend it, but if you're really interested in that idea of the hero's story.
Yeah, it's Is that the one that deconstructs it?
Yeah, it sort of breaks down all these different cultural stories based on this idea there is a set sort of plot you can expect from the hero story. Yeah. So the kind of like, oh, we have an obstacle, and oh, I have to change, that kind of thing.
I don't know if I've read it directly, but I have...
You probably have a really good idea of the ideas that are in it already.
Yeah, no, but I know I've discussed that book directly. I think it was in a... university class.
Yeah. English. That's how I was exposed to it as well.
I don't think I've actually read it though.
Yeah. I had an angry conversation with the professor because he was talking about coming of age rituals in Aboriginal societies and how there's one for men, but women don't need one because they start to bleed.
Wow.
And I was like, what?
Okay.
And then he was like, yeah, I had someone who complained about this last year, too. And I'm like, did you not think maybe to change your course material?
Or, think about what you're saying at all? Like, the slightest little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Use your brain?
Yeah.
Perhaps?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm mad at that professor, too, now.
I was going to say, I really agree with you in terms of escapism and the fantasy coming of age.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's... when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, that's what I wanted to read.
Yeah, exactly.
So much so. So, there's definitely two parts to it.
Yeah. I think a lot of good literature is coming of age.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think there's that appeal for other reasons, too.
But... Yeah, but I suppose we could always argue that good literature crosses genres, so...
Yeah, that's very true. Like, I don't think it would be particularly just coming of age, but...
Yeah, and I started reading a quote-unquote classic, which is Charles Bukowski's Ham on Rye, and it was so terrible. So terrible. Would not recommend.
Uh-oh. Are you sure you want to record saying that?
I feel like he's probably dead, or so famous he doesn't care.
Okay, yeah.
All right, so that's... Yeah, all my ideas.
That's all I think is appealing about it.
Like, I'm sure Anna and Matthew would have more interesting ideas. Maybe they'll record their own private discussion on this. That would be really interesting. See if we agree or not.
Have little fairy noises when they come in. Like the, actually,
you're wrong.
Matthew here. We didn't bother.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. We're now on Stitcher and Google Play. Please, if you like us, both like, rate, and subscribe, because it really helps our standings in iTunes. I don't know. It's good stuff. Please do it.
You can also join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclub4, as in the numeral M. Find us on Tumblr at bookclub4, the numeral again, m.tumblr.com. On Twitter at bookclub4, the numeral M. On Pinterest at pinterest.com/bookclub4m, and on Goodreads, where you will just have to search for Book Clubs for Masochists. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our Tumblr, you can find reviews and thoughts on books that might not have been discussed today, show notes that will provide links to the things that we did mention, and social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode.
All our opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment if they exist.
We would like to give acknowledgement to the Vancouver Public Library for the continued use of their Inspiration Lab, where we recorded at least half of this show. Any faults with the audio quality, however, are representative of our own learning processes.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
Come back on Tuesday, February 7th, where we will release an episode talking about planning and tracking of your personal reading, reading challenges, and things like that.
Then we'll be back again on Tuesday, February 21st, where we'll inflict upon you the genre of nonfiction romance / relationships / dating / all that stuff.
It's gonna be good.
So good. Bye!
I was worried. I was like, what's gonna happen to our mattress?
Oh, your mattress is gone. No, you guys are going to hear some really one-sided conversation for this part. I assume you have already stopped recording.
No, we haven't actually.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
Disaster!